So Parshas Vayeschanan. So yeah, we have also the Aseres Adibros, Ten Commandments, reminding us to remember the Matan Torah. But also in this week's Parsha, which I want to look at a little bit, the Mefarshim, and then some of the things we have to say, an important lesson, is the first Parsha of Shema. Right? First Parsha of Shema. It's very fundamental. We know Shema is the... it's interesting that Shema only comes at the end of the Torah, right? I mean, according to the Midrash, the Pasuk of Shema originates by Yaakov. When he was, right? Just to go through that a little bit. So when he was around his deathbed, and it says that the Shekhinah departed from him because he wanted to reveal when Mashiach was going to come, and Hashem didn't let him. But he didn't know that. He understood that he was worried that the Shekhinah is departing from him because maybe some of his sons aren't such tzaddikim like he thought they were. Maybe there's something wrong with them. So he asked them if everything's spiritually okay with them, and they answered and they said, Shema Yisrael, listen Yisrael, that was one of Yaakov's name. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We're all on one page and we all believe in Hashem. And to which he answered, says the Medrash, Baruch Shein Kovei Malchus Eloi Levoid, to bless Hashem, which is not in the Chumash, but that's why we say Baruch Shein. That's one of the reasons that we say Baruch Shein. However, Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah only says it now, because this was told to the generation going into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu was strengthening them, and he was preparing them, and so on. And therefore, as a means to michazik, to strengthen their emunah, it says Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This is the pasuk. This is the parsha. Number one, we have a mitzvah to read every day, and also this is the parsha which we live by, die by, and so on and so forth, all through the generations. Right? This is the pasuk we scream at the end of Ne'ilah. It's the pasuk, right? So I thought it would be a good idea to have a look at what some of the mafarshim say about this parsha. So we're going to work from two things. We're going to work from the Chumash, we're going to work from the paper that I've given you. So if you have a look at the handout, have a look at number one. Yeah. So there's a Balaturim. Balaturim says, if you have a look at that, it says, Ayin d'shma gedoyla. The ayin of the word Shema is big. You know that in the Mezuzah and in Sefer Torah, the ayin of Shema is big, and the dalad of Echad is big, right? So we know that some of the Mefarshim say because the word ayin and dalad makes up the word aid. Aid means a witness. When we say Shema, we are testifying to the oneness of Hashem, to the greatness of Hashem, and so on. Also, if you turn the letters around, ayin dalad makes the word da. Da means to know. It's not only a mitzvah to believe, it's a mitzvah to know, to understand as much as we can about Hashem. But the Balaturim says something a bit different. He says, Ayin de Shema Gedoyla. The Ayin of Shema is big. Why? She'ayin Shemois Yesh Li Yisrael. He quotes a medrash that the Yidden have 70 names. Did you know that? I'll explain in a minute. V'nasan lehem Torah. And Hashem gave them the Torah, she'yesh lo ayin Shemois, that have 17 names of Hashem. V'nidreshes ba'ayin ponim. And also we know that everything in Torah can be understood from 70 angles. And also he gave us the Torah, lehibodel, to become separate, me'ayin umos, from the 70 nations. Right? We know the 70 nations of the world, right, besides the Yidden. Famous 70, the concept of 70 nations. So Hashem gives us the Shema to learn and to believe and to learn the Torah and so on, to be separate from the 70 nations. Now, what does he mean? What does he mean about the 70 names of Hashem? So interesting thing, if you have a look at number two, the Balaturim doesn't say it here, but he quotes it in Bamidbar. In Bamidbar, there's another pasuk, in Bahaloischa, there's another pasuk which deals with the number 70. And that's when the slav fell, you know, when the Yidden asked for meat and all that. And Hashem said, Esvoli Shivim Ish. Gather for me 70 people and made a Sanhedrin, right? Says about Aturim there, why 70 people? Can they get Ayin Nefesh Yordel Mitzrayim? Corresponding to the 70 people that came down to Mitzrayim. You know, when the Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, he came down with 70 people. Can they get Ayin Umois, and also can they get the 70 nations? Then he says, Keneged Ayin Shemos is also keneged, corresponding to the 70 names sheyesh laHakadosh Baruch Hu that Hashem has. And what is it? So I'm not going to go through all of them. Look what he says. He gives a whole list here. I just wanted to show it to you. It's very interesting. See that the Aleph, he says Kael, then Elohim, Hashem, Echad, Adoin, Adir, Eye, Amitz, Emes, Erchapaim, and so on, right? Eshklakoiv, Baruch, Boire, the Creator, Godly, is great, Gay, and so on. 70 names, 70 descriptions of Hashem. But the funny part about it, if you look at this list and you go to this end of this paragraph, you see Samachvav, Takif. 66, Takif, is very strong. He just finished saying that there's 70 names tied to Hashem, and he lists 66, right? Bit of a problem, no? So I have on my computer a Pirush, a commentary on Baal HaTurim. So he says that not only the problems of Baal HaTurim, the problem is also in the Medrash. If you look at the Medrash, it's only 66, it's not 70. He says, what is the 70? We know that the main name of Hashem, Hash Yud Kei Vav Kei, there's four ways to spell it. One is with four letters, one is with 12 letters, one is with 42 letters, one is with 72 letters. It's called Shem, Shem Yud Bey, Shem Mab, Shem Ab, all kinds of the Kabbalistic things, four ways, different ways to spell the name of Hashem, depending on how many letters we spell out, we put in Aleph, Vav, the whole sort of Kabbalistic thing. So therefore, besides these 66, there's the four ways of spelling Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and therefore that in a total makes 70. That's what he said. That's the 70, right? When I say spell Hashem's name, I don't mean spell the way we have it today. I mean spell it if you write out the letters, like Yud is Yud Vav Dalet, and Hey is Hey Aleph, or Hey Yud, or Hey Yud Hey. Different ways of spelling these letters, right? So it comes out that there's a way to do it, four letters, which is what we have, or 12 letters, 42 letters, or 72 letters. Okay. Then you have a look just at the bottom of this page. Just what does he mean when he says there's 70 names to the Jewish people? Right, so he just brings different sukkim that, like for example, one pasuk in the Aleph. If you have a look at Aleph, there's one place where Hashem refers to the Yidden as Eishes Neurim, his young, his wife of youth. Right, Eile Atzedek or Achim, brothers, Ahuvim. You know, these are all come from pesukim. If you look at number Vav, there's Oim. Oim means a nation. How do we say? We say this on sukkas. Oim ani choima, and so on and so forth. Okay, so I wanted to just sort of bring that in. Okay, now. Third thing I want to do with you, if you turn over your page, is the Kliyokar. Before we do the Kliyokar, I want to just learn the Rashi, right? You learn the Rashi on Shema Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You see that? What does it mean, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? I mean, the famous problem is, right, why does it repeat it like that? Says Shema Yisrael. So I mean, a simple pshat like this, a simple literal translation of the pasuk goes, Shema Yisrael, listen, the Jewish people, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem who is our God, Hashem Echad is one God, right? But still, the Mefarshim battle with this concept of mentioning Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, three to all words, Hashem and Elokeinu, Hashem again. What's the idea? Says Rashi, right? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Says Rashi the following. What this pasuk means, one way to understand the pasuk is, Hashem Shehu Elokeinu Ata, God who is our God now, V'loy Elokeihu Umis, right now he's not the God of the nations. Yeah? Meaning he's not accepted by all nations. Hu Osid Liyos Hashem Echad. In the future he will be Hashem Echad, one God. One God for the entire world. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, in Sefaniah, it says, when Mashiach will come, Ki oz epoich el amim sofo berura, because then I will turn to all the nations, one clear language. Likroi kulam b'shem Hashem. They will all call in the name of Hashem. Page 972. Yeah?
Thank you.
Right? V'nemar, and it says, Bayoimahu, on that day when Mashiach comes, we say it every day in Oleinu, Yiyah Hashem echad u'shmoy echad. Will be Hashem will be one and his name will be one. Thanks so much. It's the oneness of Hashem. Okay. So what's Rashi saying? Rashi's saying is that that's why the post says Hashem, you need both. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem, right now, before Mashiach comes, Hashem is just Elokeinu. He's our God. He's not necessarily the proper recognized God of the entire world. But he will be in the future, it'll be Hashem Echad, right? There's so many meanings of Hashem Echad. But this is what Rashi says, Hashem Echad will be one God for everyone, one God for the entire world. So the Kli Yakar, which is on your handout, number 3, says the following. Let's have a look. The Kli Yakar says the following. I'm in here. Chumash, I need a handout. Okay. That's okay. No problem. Okay, it says like this. So he starts with Rashi, and he sort of extends the Rashi concept a little bit broader. He says the following. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Pirush Rashi. Right now we're just on number 3 of the handout. On the other side. Pirush Rashi. Rashi explains. Shehu Elokeinu V'lea Keumus. Right now Hashem is just our God, not the God of the nations. La'asi, but in future, Yi Hashem Echad be one God. Biuru Inyan. Says the Kli Yakar. Let's explain this a little bit. More broadly. What the Kli Yakar is really going to explain, it's not just about being our God, not the God of the nations. It's within ourselves also. We also have nations in ourselves. Meaning sometimes Hashem is our God for sometimes, and He's not our God for other times. And this is the problem, right? We have to make Him one God. Says the Kli Yakar like this. But the Omer Rav Acha Bar Chanina brings a medrash that says, like Rav Acha Bar Chanina says, Ksiv it's written by Yoimahu, Yiyeh Hashem Echad. In those days, in that time, Mashiach comes, we want God. What does it mean? Says the Gemara, it's a Gemara actually, says the Gemara, Otu ha'idno lav echad, what, nowadays Hashem is not one God? Eloi says like this, Loi ka'oilom azeh ka'oilom abo. This world is not like the world to come. Ki ba'oilom azeh, in this world, absurus toivah is with good news, when it comes good news, hu oimer baruch ha'toivah ha'metiv. We make the bracha, baruch ha'toivah Hashem alakeinu melech ha'ilom ha'toivah ha'metiv. Right? Hashem is good and He does good. When it's bad news, what do we say? We say Baruch Dayan HaEmes, right? Which, by the way, even the Gemara Brachas that says that you're supposed to make the two Brachas with the same passion, with the same belief, with the same Amunah, but it still remains two Brachas, right? One's for good, one's for bad. We might make them with the same conviction, but one is good, one is bad. But when it comes to Olam Haba, Akulam Yoimru HaToiv HaMeitiv. On everything we say HaToiv HaMeitiv. Why? This is what the Kli Yakar says. Efisha v'Olam Hazeh, in this world, Mitzad Sheroin Pulis Hafochiyos L'Ra Oy L'Toiv. When we see things that happen to us, opposites, good and not so good, right? Al Kein Yotzuk Sosav L'Minus, that gives room for some people to sort of have heretical thoughts, Loimar to say, Shtei Roshuya say, there are two forces in the world. There are two controlling forces in the world, Chas V'Shalom. Ki me'aschola achas, because from one beginning, lo yeitzu shnei hafochim, how can two opposites come out? How can two opposites come from one God? K'mavur l'mayla, like it explains, like we said before, Barash v'Reishis, like it says, Apostle v'yerev v'yiboyker yoyim echad, same thing. There's morning and there's evening. There's good times and there's bad times. There's day times and there's night times. It's really Yom Echad, it's one. But sometimes, Chas V'Shalom, a person cannot see it the same way. Right? We're all very good to say the good things come from Hashem, or when the bad things come, Chas V'Shalom, and they shouldn't come, but if they do, it's also from Hashem, right? Aval Lo'ilam Abba, when it comes Lo'ilam Abba, Shukvar Nishkechu Chol HaTzores, when all the Tzores will be forgotten, V'kulam Meshapchim V'Oimrim Al-Psuris Toivis, HaToiv HaMeitiv, so when we'll all praise Hashem and we'll say the good things, HaToiv HaMeitiv, V'lo Yiru Oz HaFochis, we won't even see the opposite. It'll all be one. Al-Kein Yiyah Hashem Echad B'fi Kol U'Shmo Yechad. Ki Shinui Hashem Ois Midin L'Rachma Misav Lem Toizu, because when you think the opposite, so the two Midos of Hashem, the Midah of Rachmim and the Midah of Din, we shouldn't mix them up and say that they're two separate things. No. So that's a pshat in the pasuk. Now let's go back to the Pasuk of Shema according to the Kli Yakar. Lefikach, when we say Hashem Elokeinu, what does that mean? Haynu Shem Shel Din V'Rachamim SheYisrael Levad Miyachsim Moisim L'Kelecha. He says like this. What it means today is different, a little bit different to Rashi. He says like this. We say Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem is Rachamim, right? Hashem refers to Rachamim. Elokeinu refers to Din, to judgment. So we know that Hashem Elokeinu, it's Hashem Echad. It's all one God. It's all the same source, right? However, this, he says, this is the way he understands Rashi. That's something that only we understand now. See, it's a very different pshat in Rashi. But the way we read Rashi, Rashi says, Hashem Elokeinu, nowadays Hashem is only our God. When Mashiach comes, it'll be everyone's God. So he says a little bit differently. He says, yes, there is a difference between now and then. The difference is like this, that we now know Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That Hashem and Elokeinu, Din and Rachmim, is all one Hashem. It's all good. Really, it's all for our good. Even though we don't always understand it, we don't always appreciate it, but Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Right? Nowadays, at Shema Yisrael, the Yidden can understand this. Yid can really come to that level of understanding that. But La'osi Lovei, Noel Abba, the whole world will understand it, that everything's from Hashem, the good and the bad. That's really one brocha, one concept, right? I mean, it's very hard to come to such a madrig, even for us, right? I tell the famous story of Rabbi Zusha of Manipali. I've told it many times, but the someone once came to the Mizritcha Magid, and he said that the Gemara says you're supposed to say a brocha for good, sorry, a brocha for bad, with the same simcha, with the same sort of enthusiasm that you say a bracha for good. He doesn't understand how that could be. How could it be? So the Mizritcha Magid said he should go to the base of Medrash and he'll see someone learning there. It's Rav Zusha Manipali. He'll be able to explain the answer. So he goes to the base of Medrash and he sees a youth sitting there, Taka Rav Zusha. Looks like he's a poverty-stricken person. Looks like he hasn't had a change of clothes for a long time and he hasn't eaten for a long time. Because Rav Zusha was very poverty-stricken, at least in the beginning. And he goes over to him and says, are you Rav Zusha? He says, my name is Zusha, yeah. He says, the Magid sent me to ask you this question. He asks him the question, how can you say the same simcha with both brachas? So Zusha says, I think it's a mistake. I don't think the Magid meant me. He says, no, but Zusha Manipali, right? You, yeah. A few back and forth, and he said, eventually Zusha says, I really think you make a mistake because I really can't answer this question because nothing bad ever happened to me. That's a madrega. That's a big madrega. They tell a story of Rav Meir of Premishlan, one of the great Hasidic rabbis of Poland. One time, Simchas Torah, his daughter was very, very, very ill and it was very serious. And eventually they screamed, they came storming in and said to him, Rav Meir, it's a very serious matzav. It's like ot, as they say, right? So Rav Meir of Premishlan turned to the Eibishter and he said like this, Rabbeinu Shalom, he said, in your Torah, it says that when something negative happens, like you say, Baruch Dayan HaEmes, you have to say with the same simcha as you bless Hashem for the good, right? So which means if Chas Shalom something happens, I'm going to have to be besimcha. On the other hand, today is Simchas Torah, it's the simcha of the Torah. And the Gemara says, the halacha is, Ein ma'arvin simcha besimcha. You're not supposed to mix two simchas together. You're supposed to have different days, different simchas. No, if something's going to happen, you're going to mix the simchas, no good. So I don't want this simcha because Ein Ma'arvin simcha b'simcha, and she got better. See, these are big madregas, but obviously the whole idea is that we learn these big madregas, at least have a perspective, even though we don't always feel it. It's not necessarily expected for us to feel it because, I mean, the Gemara does say that we have to have a velus and we have to feel the pain and so on and so forth, but we have to also have the perspective that everything comes from Hashem. It's all one God. It's all one source of everything. Right? That's the pshat. Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem is Rachamim, Elokeinu is Din, but Hashem Echad is all one God, it's all one thing. Okay. Now, let's have a look like this. Let's look at the next pasuk. It's not page 972 at the bottom. Next pasuk of the Shema, it says, Ve'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, shall love Hashem your God. V'chol levavcha, all your heart, v'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, v'chol moedecha, or v'chol moedecha is a difficult word to translate. Let's see how Rashi translates it. Rashi is like this, v'chol levavcha. What does it mean to serve Hashem with all your heart? So you know the famous idea that your heart is your emotions, but it says the letter base in this word twice. You realize that? In Hebrew, if you want to say your heart, it should say lipcha. So what's levavcha? Says Rashi, it's 972 at the bottom. Says Rashi, b'chol avavcha, b'shnei yitzarecha, with both your inclinations. You're going to serve Hashem with both the yitzatoiv and the yitzare. Whatever that means, a separate discussion. Right? Doverache, what is it? Another way. B'chol avavcha means, shala yiyye lipcha chulin echoluk ala moker. Right? It means that your heart should be focused, only one place. A person shouldn't say, you know, I love Hashem, I love other things too. We have to. It's exclusive. It's going to be exclusive after Hashem, right? Okay. That's b'chol avavcha. B'chol nafshecha. What does b'chol nafshecha mean? On a simple level, halachic level, says Rashi, afilu hu noitel es nafshecha, means even if they take your life. He learned from this pasuk the mitzvah of mesirus nefesh, the mitzvah of giving up your life in certain circumstances, particularly when it comes to Shema Yisrael, meaning when it comes to avodah zarah. Right? Avodah zarah, we know, is one of the three sins that you have to give up your life for. And the Gemara, when the Gemara discusses it, you're supposed to violate the entire Torah to save a life, except for the three cardinal sins, one of which is idol worship. There's idol worship, murder, and adultery. Those are the three sins you have to give up your life and not transgress, even if it costs your life, right? So one of them is avodah zarah. How does the Gemara says, where do we know this from? We know it's from this pasuk, because it says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and it says, and you shall love Hashem even b'chol nafshecha, even if it means you even have to give up your soul. Right? That's how strong it is. What's b'chol moedecha, says Rashi? Says Rashi, interesting thing, b'chol mamoincha, with all your money, with all your resources. Which is like almost like an anti-climax. It says Hashem, you shall love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, and then with all your money. It says Rashi, Taka, you're right. But that's what Rashi adds in the next sentence. Yesh lecha adam, there are certain people, there can be an individual where his resources are more precious to him than his body. We find this throughout history. People risk their lives to keep their money, right? Because the money was even more important to him than their life, right? That's why it says you can love Hashem even with all your resources. Sometimes a person can say, I love Hashem, I'll daven, I'll learn, I'll do things, but when it comes to my money, don't touch me. He says, no, you can love Hashem with everything. Even with of course, the other pshat of b'chol moedecha, we've talked about many times, the idea of always growing, doing more than you can. Me'oid shalcha, the word me'oid means very, right? Me'oidecha means you're very. We have to serve Hashem with everything that we have, plus more. We have to give a bit more than we can. But it has to be our very. Each person, according to their own madrega, a little bit more than they can, right? That's a dedicated to be to Hashem. Have a look at your handout, the Balaturim. Balaturim says like this. Very nice shot. The Ohavta. It's number 4 on your handout at the bottom over there. The Ohavta Oisius Ho'ovois. The word Ve'ohavta is the same letters as Ho'ovois, the patriarchs. See that? Right? If you scramble down the letters, you'll see Ve'ohavta is the same letters as Ho'ovois. What does that mean? Because L'chol L'vavcho, V'chol Nafshcho, V'chol Mo'idecho represent the three patriarchs. How so? B'chol L'vavcho, says Rashi, and Hashem says we should love with all our heart. Ke'avram, that goes according to Avram. Shenemar, as it says, U'matzosa es levavai, we find this every day davening, that Hashem found Avram Avinu's heart trustworthy in Hashem, was faithful to Hashem. Right? So we find that expression of lev, the heart, in reference to serving Hashem with regards to Avram Avinu. That's U'matzosa es levavai. B'chol nafshecha, what does b'chol nafshecha mean? Ke Yitzchak, that's like Yitzchak. Why? She Yitzchak Mosar Nafsho LaKadosh Baruch Hu, he gave up his life for Hashem to go on the Mizbeach, to go on the Akedah. Yeah? Uvachol Mo'idecha Ki Yaakov. Chol Mo'idecha, we go Rashi's Pshat, the Mo'idecha means money, resources. By Yaakov, we said, the Chsibbe, he said, he's going to serve Hashem. This is when he was running away from Esav. And Hashem promised him that he'll be with him and he'll return him and so on and so forth. Yaakov got up and he made a promise to Hashem and he said, it says by Yaakov Avinu, whatever Hashem gives me, aser asrenu loch, I will give a tenth away to him. Right? I will serve you, I will give a tenth away. That's serving Hashem with your resources. Right? You take your resource and you give tzedakah and so on and so forth. So that's Yaakov. So therefore, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nashcha, b'chol meidecha, just like the Ovois served Hashem. Yaakov, Avram Avinu, his heart was faithful to Hashem, that's levavcha. Yitzchak was ready to give up his life for Hashem, that's nafshcha. And Yaakov served Hashem with these resources. He was going to give a tenth of everything he had to Hashem. That's b'chol nafsh, b'chol me'oidecha. Yeah? Okay. Let's go a little bit further. Let's just read through the Shema paragraph. Before we go further, just going back to Hashem Echad, right? Obviously, we have the halachic meaning of Hashem Echad. Halachic meaning of Hashem Echad, the way it says in Shulchan Aruch is, and the way it's explained in deeper places as well, is that when we say Hashem Echad, it's not enough just to think that Hashem is one God. There's not two gods, right? That's obvious. What does it mean, Hashem Echad? There's only really one reality, and everything depends on Him. So the Shulchan Aruch says that Echad means Aleph, the Ches, the eight, refers to the seven heavens and the earth. The Dalet, which is Gematria 4, represents the four corners of the earth. And we know that the corners of the earth, what is above and what is below, says the Shulchan Aruch, what is around us, everything must be totally subservient and given over to the Aleph. Aleph is Alufay Shal Olam, the master of the universe. Yeah? All right. Then says the next pasuk like this. It's on top of page 974. Hashem says, these words that I am commanding you today should be on your heart. What does this mean? It's actually referring to learning Torah. If you want to really love Hashem, you have to take the words that Hashem is giving us and make them every day, new, fresh, and learn them every day. And therefore, what you should do, says the pasuk, "Shinantem levadecha v'dibarta bom." You shall teach it to your sons. They should speak Torah words of Torah b'shivtcha b'visecha when you go in your house, when you sit in your house. V'lechtecha v'aderech, when you're on the way, v'shach b'chov kumecha, when you lie down, when you get up, and so on. And then the first paragraph of Shema ends with two mitzvahs. Which two mitzvahs? Ukshartom lo'ois al yodecha. You shall bind them on your... This is the law of tefillin, right? You shall bind them on for a sign on your heart. V'hoyu l'toytofais b'nei necha. And there will be for a sign among between your eyes. Rashi points out, what does the word toytofais mean? It's a funny word. Toytofais can mean a sign, but it's also made up of two other words in other languages. It's just how we know that there, how many paragraphs there are in the tefillin? Four paragraphs, right? Because the word toytofais comes from the word two words, tat and kat, and pat, sorry. Rashi says that the word tat in Katvi, in a place called Katvi, means two, and a pat in certain places of Africa also means two. So therefore, you put it together, all it means four, and there's four parshas to the tefill, right? Okay. Good. What I wanted to do, however, I wanted to focus a little bit on this tefillin because... I want to share with you a beautiful idea that we learn from mitzvah tefillin. Now, it's a funny thing for me to do this year because it's a shame for women and women don't put on tefillin. But it's not entirely true. What I mean by that is there are mitzvahs in the Torah that women are exempt from, right? The basic rule is called mitzvah saseh shas man groma. The general rule is that mitzvahs that are time bound, women are exempt from. Part of the reason is because they are restricted by time, right? Very hard to hold women down to a time because they've got their akeres habayis, their children to take care of, and so on and so forth. So the Torah exempts their mitzvahs. But it's a mistake to think that they don't have a connection to those mitzvahs because even mitzvahs you don't have to do. Right? So some mitzvahs we find out, I'm just giving you a bit of background for what I'm going to say. So some mitzvahs that women are exempt, they took upon themselves anyways. Like shofar, for example. Shofar, a woman doesn't have to hear shofar. Al pi din, al pi halacha. They're obligated to hear shofar. This is time bound, it's only Rosh Hashanah. Yet they should, because now women have taken upon themselves. So first of all, any mitzvah that a woman doesn't have to keep and keeps it anyways, gets a mitzvah, right? She doesn't have to keep, but she gets a mitzvah. That's why women have taken it upon themselves to hear shofar. Lulav and sukkahs is interesting. Women took upon themselves to shake lulav. Sukkahs, not so much, right? I mean, they sit in the sukkah, but they don't have to. And women didn't sign up for making sure that every time they eat a piece of bread during sukkahs, they should eat in the sukkah. They were clever, you see. They didn't take it upon themselves. That's a bit more difficult. But look, now, the reason that tefillin, one of the reasons that tefillin, women never took upon themselves to wear tefillin, it's because in general, even men today, we try to keep tefillin to a minimum. Because it says in many, so this is one of the reasons. It says in Svarim, like, for example, you know, I'll give you an example, even with children, even with boys I'm talking about. So boys, for example, we give them a chinuch, right? To keep all the mitzvahs. Girls also, women and girls, children have to keep mitzvahs. Education, right? So for example, a boy who's 8 years old should hear kiddush already, right? Shakes a lulav, sits in a sukkah. Why? So the rabbanon and the rabbi said we have to be mechanech children. As soon as they become of age of chinuch, as soon as they can understand what the mitzvah is all about, we have to train them to do the mitzvah. So, for example, the general age of chinuch is more like around 6 or 7. So the pshat is that already when kids are, I mean, even before, but even when kids are 6 or 7, we start making sure they make brachas, they bench, they keep sharp, all these things, right? Tefillin not. Tefillin we only start a month or two before the bar mitzvah. Right? There are some chassidim that don't even do that. Some chassidim start on the day of the mitzvah, the day before. Why is that? It says that tefillin, you need a guf nok, you need a very, very sort of refined and focused body. Right? You need to be in a certain level of focus to wear tefillin, right? That's why we actually minimize tefillin today. It used to be tefillin was something people wore all day, like tzitzis, right? But that was cut out because we're not in a madrega to wear tefillin all day. So essentially, you have to be you're supposed to be in a certain madrega to put on tefillin, right? That's why men, if we weren't obligated, wouldn't put on tefillin. Even today, we keep it to a minimum. We only keep it on for davening. And we try to be careful not to talk while we're doing that, all the kind of stuff, right? Children, we don't educate the mitzvah of tefillin. Only even boys. Only just before mitzvah to get them used to it. Because no choice. Once you come to mitzvah, you have to put on tefillin. You can't get out of it. But kind of, we almost like avoid putting on tefillin if you can, because we're not that madrega, right? I think that's why the women haven't taken upon themselves that mitzvah, because tefillin is not one of those things you take upon yourself to do unless you have to, right? Now, having said all of that, every mitzvah that we don't do, even mitzvahs like, for example, like do with men and women. For example, let's say mitzvahs that we don't do today because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, right? But we still learn about them. Why? Because we can still fulfill them, beruchnis. Every mitzvah needs to be fulfilled physically and spiritually. So when we say that women don't have the obligation to put on tefillin, it's worth sharing with you an idea of tefillin anyway, because we all have to learn a lesson from tefillin. We all have to understand the formula that tefillin creates for us in terms of serving Hashem. Okay. So there's an interesting halacha, right? So this idea that tefillin, the Rebbe once explained, I'm going to share it with you. Tefillin has two parts, what we call the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel rosh. There's the hand tefillin and the head tefillin, right? They're actually two separate mitzvahs, they're not the same mitzvah. They're two separate mitzvahs. What do I mean by that? If someone was stuck on a desert island and he only had one tefillin, he only had a tefillin shel rosh or a tefillin shel yad, there was no one else around and he couldn't get tefillin, what would he do? He put on whatever he had. If he only has the hand tefillin, he puts it on. If he only has the head tefillin, he puts it on. Why? Because it's a mitzvah. They're two independent mitzvahs. So therefore, even if they fulfill two separate mitzvahs. So therefore, even if I have a tefillin shel yad, I don't have a tefillin shel rosh, or for someone chas v'shalom doesn't have a hand, or someone who can't put on tefillin in his hand for whatever reason, but they can still put on tefillin shel rosh, right? Because they're two separate mitzvahs; they're not dependent on each other. Having said that, the Gemara tells us like this: the Gemara says when a person puts on tefillin, he should put the tefillin shel yad first. Right? The hand tefillin first. And then the tefillin shel rosh. And then the head tefillin. When he takes it off, when we take off tefillin, we go the other way around. We take off the head tefillin first and then put on the hand tefillin. Right? Says the Gemara, okay, understand, when you put it on, because that's the order of the pasuk, right? Kshartam l'ois al yod cheshir tai on your hand, and then there should be between your eyes. So go, right? But when you take it off, why do you have to take it off? Like, why do you have to take the rosh off first? Maybe we should take off maybe we should take it off in the same order we put it on. Take off the hand first, then take off the head. Says the Gemara, no. If you look at this pasuk in Shema, right? Look at it again. It says, you shall put it as a sign on your hand, which is referring to the hand filling. Then it says, Vehoyu, and they should be, let the top face ben yanecha. It doesn't say it should be a sign between your eyes. It just says they should be a sign between your eyes. Correct? They is plural. So we learn out from there that the tefillin shel rosh should as much as you can help it, should never be on your head without the tefillin shel yad. It should always be they. Every time the head tefillin is on the head, it should be a second. It should be one of two. That's what says Vehayu, right? That's why we put on the yad first, then the rosh. And that's why we take it off, we take off the rosh first. Because if we take the yad first, then the rosh is left on the head alone. You're not supposed to have that. It's supposed to be Vehayu. They should be. Clear? Okay. I'll share with you an interesting thing halachically. We have a thing, you know, when he's learning yeshiva, this came up a lot. Sometimes when you have a halacha, and you can look at the halacha from two different ways. It's called the hakira. Right? You can dissect it and you say, is this halacha coming from this approach or is it coming from that approach? And then what you do, it's very exciting when you analyze something like that. And then what happens is, you say to yourself, what difference does it make how I analyze the halacha? So sometimes you can come up with a scenario where it does make a difference. That one, depending on which approach you took to understand the halacha, in that particular case, the halacha might become different. Yeah, with me? So let me give you an example. So there's two ways to look at this halacha. One way to look at the halacha is, this is a halacha that's only relevant to the head tefillah. And also nothing to do with the hand tefillah. The hand tefillah can be put on whatever you want. But the problem is that there's a mitzvah that the head tefillah should never be alone without the hand tefillah. Right? So it's all to do with the rosh. It's not, this mitzvah, this halacha is not relevant to the yad tefillah. Practically it is, because in order to make sure the rosh is not alone, you have to put on the yad first. But really, it's nothing to do with the yad, it's got to do with the rosh. It's the rosh's problem, this. Follow? Okay. That's one approach. Another approach is, no, it's actually a halacha which is relevant to both pairs, the yad and the rosh. Because for whatever reason, Hashem wanted tefillin put on in a certain order. At first, you must put the tefillin shel yad, and then you must put the tefillin shel rosh. There's an order to it. Okay? In other words, it's a halacha which is not just about that the rosh shouldn't be alone. It's a halacha that you have to put on tefillin in a certain order. That's how it goes. Question is, that's like splitting hairs. So what's the difference between these two approaches? So I'll tell you like this, halachically, and then I'm going to share it with you a philosophical idea. The difference is like this. What happened in the following scenario? I'll give you a scenario where now you all of a sudden have to think, what's the approach? And we'll see a difference between the two approaches we just said before. Let's say someone is not well, okay? And he can't put on tefillin himself. So that happens sometimes, unfortunately. So what do? You help the person put on tefillin. You put it on for them. You take the hand, you wrap it on. You take the head, you put it on the head for them, right? Or we do this very often when we meet someone who doesn't know how to put on tefillin, we ask them to do the mitzvah, and then all they're doing, so we do it for them. We wrap around for them so they know what they're doing. Okay. What happens in the scenario, someone was sick and he couldn't put on tefillin himself. So two people came to help him. What they did was, one did the yad, one did the rosh. And they put them on at exactly the same time. Is that? Is that okay or not? Not okay? What's that? It's not on its own. See, here is going to make a difference what approach we take in terms of understanding the halacha, why we put in the yad first and then the rosh. If you say it's got nothing to do with the yad, it's just a rosh halacha to make sure the rosh is never alone, so it doesn't have to be in a particular order. Even if they put on together, the rosh was never alone. That's fine, right? So it doesn't have to be the yad before the rosh. It could be together. They could be put on together. Why? Because you put them on together, you still obtain, you're still fulfilling the objective here, the goal, that the rosh should never be alone. It's fine. But if you say that you have to put on the yad before the rosh, it's a halacha relevant to both. It's not a halacha only about the rosh not being alone, but it's a halacha about the order in which you have to put on tefillin. There's an order to putting on tefillin. First comes yad, then comes rosh. Then if you put them both on together, you make a mistake. It's a wrong thing to do. Because you haven't fulfilled the idea of yad first and then rosh. That's the two ways to look at the halacha. And the difference will be in that particular scenario when they were put on together. Okay, clear? Now. When we have a dispute, or when we have two ways to look at something halachically, so normally it's very hard to implement both things, right? In other words, you can't say they're both right. You've got to choose one. How we paskin, is that? So for example, if we have a machlokes on Chanukah, we should have one candle progressing to eight or eight candles declining to one. Machlokes be shammai be sil. You can't do both. You can't do one of them. So it's two approaches in Torah. two fascinating things to learn, but in practice, you only do one of them. Okay, obviously. So that's how we paskal halacha. However, even when we paskal halacha like that, we say in practice, you need to do one. But in theory, in spiritual observance of the mitzvah, both are correct. And both can apply. Right? So therefore, taking this idea now on a spiritual level, okay, where we have two approaches. One approach is that the reason we put on Yad before Rosh is because the Rosh should never be alone. That's one approach. The other approach we said was we do it because the Yad should always come before the Rosh. Another approach. So now we're going to say they're both right. If you understand them spiritually, you have to do both things. So like this. We say that tefillin shel Yad is called the hand tefillin. I don't know if you know what that means. We don't put it on the hand, right? We put it up here. Which is near the what? Near the heart. Yeah? This is one of the great things between us and the tzedukim, the Sadducees. Because this is one of the things where you see Torah Shabbat Peh is so important. Torah Shabbat Chtav, the written Torah, says you put the tefillin on your hand. And you put them between your eyes. According to written, if you take it just literally, we put the tefillin, the hand tefillin here, and the head tefillin between the eyes over here. Right? A little difficult here. But we know Torah Shabbat Peh tells us not the way it is. It's called Yad and Rosh, but actually the Yad is more up here, it's in the connect of the heart. And the Rosh is here before the hairline, before the end of the brain, right? So that's how we put on tefillin. So like this. The hand tefillin being next to the heart is a symbol of heart. It's a symbol of Yirat Shamayim. Fear of Hashem. Being connected to Hashem. Commitment to Hashem. Right? What's the head represent? The head represents learning, understanding, knowing Hashem. Wisdom. Right? So like this. We know that before a person can start learning Torah, there has to be fear of Hashem. Correct? There's a pasuk we say, Reishis Chachma, Yiras Hashem. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. Why is that so important? Because if a person starts to learn without the foundation of Yirat Shamayim, fear of heaven, the learning is not a good learning. Because when we talk about learning Torah, we're talking about the wisdom of Hashem. The wisdom of Hashem is very difficult to absorb. It's very difficult to internalize. Yeah? You know, in the end of every Amidah, before we go three steps back, there's a phrase we say, right? I don't know if you noticed it. We say, V'nafshi ka'ofra lakol tihiyeh. My soul should be like dust to everyone. Psach libi b'sara secha, open my heart in your Torah. Very interesting sequence. The deep idea of that is we should be humble, but not just about being humble. If Hashem should allow us to be humble like the dust of the earth, and only then, psach libi b'sara secha, only then my heart can be opened to Torah. Because you learn Torah, when you're arrogant, it's a very bad thing. It has an adverse effect. It backfires. A person can learn Torah, and the Torah can be damaging rather than uplifting, because can make a person more arrogant, and it can also make it very badly in terms of how we interpret the Torah. When you learn Torah, although Hashem wants us to think, it's a very interesting thing learning Torah. Hashem wants us to think, and Hashem wants us to use our brain, but to be surrendered and completely subservient to the truths of Torah, to the axioms of Torah. Understand? And build on those. Can't make up our own stuff. Can only, right? That all takes Yiras Shamayim. So therefore the pasuk says, before you can learn Torah, you have to be humble. Humble is part of Yiras Shamayim. It means not being arrogant, going out of yourself, being subservient and surrendering to Hashem. And the pasuk says, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, right? That explains why you put on Tefillin Shel Yad before Tefillin Shel Rosh. Because Tefillin Shel Yad represents the Yira, the fear, the emotion, the commitment to Hashem. The Sharoshik represents the learning, the understanding. The fear, the Yirat Shamayim must come before the learning. Otherwise, learning is in danger. So that's the approach of looking at this concept of tefillin as an order. First yad, then rosh. But on the other hand, the other part is also true. So a person can think, if that's the case, right, if that's the case, then, okay, I have to make sure I have Yirat Shemayim before the learning. But when I learn, I don't have to think about so much about Yirat Hashem. I have to learn, just think about the learning. Says the Torah, no, that's a mistake. It's not only as an introduction to learning, it's while you learn also. The learning, the rush should never be alone. It always has to come together with Yirat Shemayim. When you learn, you have to make sure that as you learn, you're always reminding yourself of whose Torah this is. That it's not just a human logic and not a human subject, it's a divine knowledge system. It's Hashem's Torah. It's a true and eternal Torah. Not enough just to have it before you start. You've got to have it before you start. But also you have to have it while you're learning. The Alter Rebbe in Tanya says that when a person learns, every so often he needs to stop and just remind himself, whose Torah is this that we're learning, right? And be committed to its truth. That's the second approach, that it's not just about the yad, it's about the rosh also. The rosh should not be ever alone, it should always be together with the yad. And if it's together with Yirat Shemayim, then the learning becomes valuable. Yeah? Alright, I think we'll do an early mark today. Thank you.